could now access toward his own father felt practically microscopic. Long ago, Mikey had accepted that they would never have the relationship that he wanted, and he had lost his desire to change his father, understand him, or connect with him. Mikey only wanted to be as inoffensive to his father as possible. Nowadays, every word he spoke was an attempt to neutralize a situation or dynamic between them. His ultimate goal was that nothing of any substance or emotional value be revealed or exchanged, that nothing upset the balance. A net zero. Mikey had become so skillful at concealing his true self in his father's presence, it was as if he had sewn himself in under his skin. He only wanted to be agreeable. Flat. Nothing. Hollow. Alice said, "Do you feel like you love me?" Mikey looked away from her. He didn't know what he felt. Numb? Weary? He said, "I don't know what I feel." Alice said, "Why?" Mikey stared out over the white lake, then up into the thick splatter of white stars. How would he remember this black sky, positively stuffed with stars, when he no longer had sight? He couldn't. There was no way. It would be lost. At one point, he had decided that a clear, starry night sky like this was Liszt's Waldesrauschen for piano, but realized now that the piece didn't quite capture it. It wasn't right. Mikey heard a dog howling far away, and the shriek of a predatory bird. His hands were fists. He felt tears on his cheeks, and they were cold and weird. Alice said, "Mikey, you're hurting me." He said, "I know."
Chapter 21. Finn had been circling a tree up the path, and now he returned to them, nosing his old gray face up toward Alice's crotch. Alice laughed and leaned down to kiss his head. She drank more bourbon, then passed the bottle to Mikey, who did the same. He drank so much, his throat turned to fire. He shivered. Alice reached down to retrieve Chris's glove from the snow where she had thrown it moments earlier. She shook off the glove and was helping Mikey maneuver his stiff and swollen fingers back into it when the moment was interrupted by a snowball that smacked directly into Mikey's back. Mikey spun around. A thin, athletic figure was running down the path from which they had come, sprinting at top speed, kicking up little snowstorms in his wake. Alice said, "What the?" And she stared at the approaching figure for a moment before shrieking, "Jimmy!" Jimmy hurtled toward the two of them, then performed an elegant slide right at Alice's feet. He rose and brushed snow off himself. He laughed and threw his arms around both of them. In the soft light of the moon, with flushed cheeks and bright eyes, Jimmy looked healthy and radiant, sporting a neat black beard, his dark hair long and wavy. "What are you guys doing out here in the snow?" Jimmy said. "My dog had to piss, and I decided to try to seduce Mikey," Alice said. "Thought it would be like taking candy from a baby. I was wrong." Jimmy laughed heartily, then clapped Mikey over the back. "It's been way too long." Alice said, "How'd you know we were out here?" "Just pulled in 5 minutes ago," Jimmy said. He clapped his hands together and danced up and down for warmth. "On my way into the house, I saw footprints out the side door. Couldn't tell who they belonged to, but figured I'd come find out and check."
"Yo-ho-ho," Alice said. "Well, I'm just about frozen now, and Finn's had more than enough time to pee. Let's head in and warm up. We've just about killed this bottle of bourbon anyway."
"How's everybody?" Jimmy said on the way back to the house. Mikey gave him a rundown on who all was at the house as they made their way up the path. Inside, Alice brushed the snow off Finn and hung up Sam's coat. Mikey said, "How are things with you, man?" Jimmy said, "I'm good, you guys. I'm really good." He wore slim-fitting jeans, a cream button-down, and a dark wool jacket, which he removed. He ran a hand through very glossy, dark locks. Alice looked him over and said,
Damn, Jimmy. I wouldn't have thought it possible, but you've managed to get even more handsome. What's your secret? Maybelline?
Jimmy said, You're catching me right after a 6-day cleanse.
What's that mean?
6 days on juice. I do it every year after the holidays.
Just juice? Alice said. Good God. Does gravy count?
Alice and Mikey followed Jimmy through the kitchen, where he rummaged through the refrigerator and prepared a plate of cold leftovers for himself, then to the liquor cabinet, where he picked out a bottle of Cote du Rhone. He poured a glass for each of them. They went into the main room, where Jimmy started to eat his leftovers at the coffee table. Alice sniffed the air and looked at Mikey.
Is that me or you? She said. Because it's obviously not Jimmy. Rich people don't sweat.
She sniffed her own armpit, then leaned over to sniff Mikey's.
It's you, she confirmed. Very athletic.
Thank you for that.
Jimmy swallowed the food that was in his mouth and wiped his lips.
Guys, he said, how are we doing with this Sally stuff? Everybody doing okay?
Mikey nodded. Alice briefly filled Jimmy in on the conversations they'd had earlier with Lynn and Sam, and then she told him about her own romantic relationship with Sally. Jimmy said, Oh, I knew all about that. He turned to face Mikey. You didn't know about that? Mikey shook his head.
You did? How?
Sally told me, Jimmy said.
Alice said, Really? She told me she didn't want anyone to know. I had no idea the two of you talked.
Yeah, Jimmy said. She came to me about it because, well, because she knew. She thought I would understand. Jimmy set down the silverware on his plate and leaned back into the couch. Look, I don't want this to be a big thing. I was sort of hoping to avoid doing it in front of everybody in any sort of looky-at-me way, but... His blue eyes darted up toward the ceiling.
Alice cut in. You're gay.
Jimmy let out a big laugh. I should have known. Nothing gets by Alice Clancy. Mikey said, You'll have to excuse her. In case you've forgotten, she knows everything about everybody. Jimmy finished the thought. Mikey said, Oh.
Oh.
He stared at Jimmy, who laughed again. Yeah, I'm gay, Jimmy said. I'm out in L.A.
Alice said, I was partly joking, Jimmy, but... Geez, I mean, I'm happy for you.
Jimmy said, You guys remember my parents, Catholic as they come. It's part of the reason I moved out west. There were other reasons, but I knew I wasn't ready to come out to my parents, and I also didn't want to keep pretending in everyday life, modifying my voice, my body language, faking interest in girls. I wanted to start a new life where everyone knew. So, at least this way, I only have to pretend once or twice a year when we do family trips.
Alice said, Your parents still don't know?
Jimmy shook his head.
We haven't had the talk.
Mikey said, I hope you were never scared of our reaction. Jimmy said, The only reason I didn't come out sooner to you guys was because, Mikey, I know you're still local, and I didn't want you to be in a position where you'd have to lie to my parents or other mutual friends. I didn't want anyone else to have to tell lies to keep my secret. It's always seemed easier to just keep these lives fully separate, Jimmy explained.
Alice said, I'm sorry you've had to keep this from your folks. That's heavy.
I mean, my parents weren't thrilled when I started dating women, but they've always been live and let live, no secrets.
Jimmy said, I always thought that maybe when I met the right guy, when I was actually ready to settle down, think about getting married, maybe that's when I'll be ready for them to know. Mikey said, So, when did you know? His calves were hard from their trek through the snow, and he massaged them with his thumbs. I always knew, Jimmy said, but around 13, 14 is when I knew. Even once I knew, though, I tried to reverse it, tried to make my voice deeper, my laugh, you know, less of a giggle. Tried to use my hands differently. Sat on them so they wouldn't flip around the way they wanted to flip around.
Alice said, And Sally knew too? You told her?
Jimmy nodded. Sally and I confided in one another about a lot of things. Her mother, for example.
What about her mother?
Jimmy was quiet for a bit.
Corinne had a lot of troubles, he said.
Full-blown alcoholic, for starters. That was obvious. Started every single day with a glass of vodka before she could even get out of bed.
Shaking like a leaf, Sally said, if she went more than an hour without a sip of something.
Jimmy gripped his bottom lip with his teeth, then continued.
And Corinne had men in and out of their house, constantly. Sally was exposed to it all, and way too early.
Thin walls.
Mikey said, I always sort of got that impression, but never knew for sure.
Jimmy said, the reason Sally first confided in me was because she slept in my basement sometimes.
Alice said, she didn't feel safe in her own home?
Jimmy nodded. We were just two houses down from Sally, you guys remember, and we had that storm window that led into the basement. Tiny thing. No grown person ever would have been able to crawl in. But when Sally was 10 or 11, she asked me if she could sneak over and sleep in our basement sometimes, when things got noisy at her own house. Noisy and also, God, this still haunts me. But there were times when Corinne would be passed out cold, and the men would go wandering through the house. Jimmy paused and rubbed his eye sockets hard before looking directly at them both, his bright eyes watery.
Oh, no, Mikey breathed, aching a deep, deep cramp of sorrow in his chest.
Jimmy was nodding slowly.
So?
He sighed, but eventually continued. I made it part of my nightly routine to unlock and prop that basement window open, so Sally could have a safe and quiet place to sleep when her mother had a man over. My parents never knew.
Did she sleep over often? Alice asked.
Jimmy nodded.
Sometimes, if I happened to be up anyway, I'd go down to the basement in the middle of the night. If Sally was there and if she was awake, we'd talk.
That was when we told each other our hard secrets. The one Sally and I only shared with each other.
Like who her mother really was, Alice said. What Sally was exposed to in their own home.
Jimmy nodded. And eventually, when I learned what it meant to be gay, and realized that I was, and worked up the courage to say that word aloud, Sally was the one I trusted with that hard secret.
Alice said, and Sally trusted you with our secret, hers and mine, I mean, that she thought she might be gay too.
Jimmy nodded.
Mikey said, did Sally ever tell you why she cut us all off?
Jimmy shook his head sadly.
She didn't give me any more warning than she gave either of you, and she never sought me out personally later to explain. It was just, it must have been a terrible, terrible place she was in.
Mikey said, alone. Alone, Jimmy repeated. His eyes skittered back and forth between Mikey and Alice.
Look, it kills me to say this, but it was my fault that she left us.
Alice said, no, Jimmy, there's no... Jimmy held up a hand, silencing her.
I mean it, he said. The thing is, these secrets, it was too much. Sally needed help. I'm not even talking professionally, I just mean she needed more than I could offer her. I wasn't equipped to talk her through everything she was feeling. In my mind, I think, I equated my own problems, discovering that I was gay and coming to grips with that, with what she was going through. But the reality is, I didn't have a clue how to talk to Sally, how to help her. If I had encouraged her to reach out to you guys, or to an adult, to anyone, her burden might have been less. I didn't, though, because I was too wrapped up in my own self, and I was too afraid.
Mikey said, afraid of what?
I was afraid that if Sally's secrets came out, mine would too.
Jimmy swallowed and gripped his nose, then released it.
Things might have turned out so different. She might not have broken.
Alice said, you didn't break her, Jimmy.
Jimmy said, I didn't fix her either, and I was really the only one who had the chance.
The three of them sat in a dark silence for a bit, and then Alice rose to use the restroom. After she had left the room, Jimmy leaned close to Mikey and said,
there's something else I really need to tell you, Mikey. Just you.
Jimmy's voice was thick and strained with nerves.
Mikey felt a deeply unsettling little tremor of adrenaline spike through him. He said, what is it?
The muscles of Jimmy's lips were trembling.
It's about...
But before he could continue, he was interrupted by a creak that suddenly rose from the stairway across the room. Lynn was in red flannel pajamas and making her way down the stairs. Issa followed in sweatpants and a U-Penn t-shirt. Sam followed closely behind, rubbing his sleepy eyes as he lumbered down the stairs in navy pajamas with white piping.
Jimmy leaned toward Mikey and whispered, we'll talk sometime when it's just the two of us.
He gave Mikey's shoulder a squeeze.
Lynn cried, Jimmy!
When she saw him, and she ran to him.
Sam said, Jimbo! And his whole posture immediately woke as he saw his old friend.
Jimmy embraced both of them, and Sam erupted in happy laughter, holding Jimmy close. Alice returned.
Lynn introduced Jimmy to Issa. Then she said, Jimmy, I had no idea you were here. I just dragged Sam out of bed and was coming down to tell everyone the news.
Jimmy said, what's the news?
Lynn smiled broadly and said,
he said yes.
What now?
Lynn pushed curls from her face and said, I woke Issa up and asked him to marry me.
Alice shook her fists and said, yo ho ho!
They all exchanged hugs and happy words. Then Jimmy corralled the group into the kitchen where he located ingredients for a non-alcoholic fizzy red drink, which he served from a punch bowl, and Alice popped a bottle of champagne. Jimmy turned on the stereo and found a station that was playing a sultry ballad. He turned the volume up and grabbed Alice by the waist and spun her around the kitchen, dipping her, nearly dropping her, singing lyrics to her with great emotion.
It had to be you, Jimmy sang. Just say yes, please do.
Sam cut in as Jimmy's partner, and the two men laughed and sung and spun one another clumsily through the room. Alice asked Lynn if they had set a date, and Lynn told her to cool her jets. Issa and Sam took dinner leftovers from the refrigerator, removed the foil, made themselves plates, and microwaved them. Sam asked Jimmy about life in L.A. and gazed at him curiously when Jimmy told anecdotes that included details the rest of them simply could not fathom. Tacos with raw fish in them. Surf competitions held right outside his back window. Wheatgrass. Bikram yoga. The room set to 104 degrees with 40% humidity, Jimmy explained.
Why would you want to do that? Alice said, blinking at Jimmy incredulously. Why would anyone ever want to do that?
Mikey and Lynn went to the main room where they stood next to each other at that massive wall of windows, looking out across the great snowy expanse. The snow was blue and gray and white and silver and pink and gold. It spun up in little frosty cones that danced over the landscape. Mikey could still see his and Alice's and Jimmy's footprints in the path leading down to the beach.
What's it like to find love? Mikey said to Lynn.
Lynn was quiet for a bit.
Then she said, it's like finding the ground.
The ground? Mikey didn't understand. Lynn hooked her arm through his elbow.
You'll come to my wedding, won't you? She said.
Suddenly, Alice was behind them, then between them, putting both Mikey and Lynn in a gentle headlock on either side of her.
Of course, Mikey said. You'll need someone to keep Alice in line. Alice said, wouldn't a wedding be boring and terrible without me?
Lynn laughed.
Alice sang, can't hold me back, can't hold me back, get a heart attack, can't hold me back.
Then she skipped across the room to Finn, who lay in front of the fire. She roused him and said, watch me. She performed a wild and clumsy dance before him, and Finn's tongue sagged long out of his mouth. Lynn and Mikey watched Alice for a bit. Then Lynn leaned close to Mikey and said, there's something Alice isn't telling you. Mikey turned to face Lynn.
Oh?
Lynn nodded. I didn't think there was anything Alice didn't tell anybody, Mikey said.
Hmm.
He wondered if it had anything to do with whatever Jimmy had to tell him, too. Sam sidled up next to Mikey once Lynn had gone to join Issa elsewhere in the room.
Mikey, Sam spoke softly. Your face earlier when we talked. I know you think I'm a bad man.
Sam spoke these words earnestly, a direct question with no trace of self-pity. Mikey shook his head.
No, he said.
Sam said, I know you don't think I'm a good man. You couldn't. Mikey thought of Lynn's words from earlier.
That's what friends are for, isn't it? To tell you you're good even if you're bad?
He couldn't decide if he agreed with this. There were a lot of things he couldn't feel sure about. He couldn't speak for Sally on how much that moment with Sam had affected her, the scope of the impact. It might have changed everything. It might have changed very little. Mikey gazed at Sam's pink face, which timorously awaited a response. He couldn't quite bring himself to say, you're good, or we're good, or even, it's okay. Instead, he placed his hand on Sam's round, warm shoulder and said the truest thing he could think of. You are my dear friend. Sam gripped Mikey's hand and said, you are my dear friend. Mikey wondered if having a dear friend and being a dear friend might be almost as good as being a good man. He gazed across the room where Alice sat on the floor next to Finn, who was curled tail to chin on the knotted umber rug in front of the fireplace. Alice was holding Finn's paw in her hand and staring into the fire, where the coals had gone blue-gray and the flames rippled low. Jimmy cracked open a bottle of Lagavulin several minutes later and poured a half-inch for himself, then one for Alice and Mikey, too. Alice said, what are you trying to do here, Jimmy? Force-feed me your fancy-pants drinks until I black out? Get me to howl at the moon and shit myself, that the plan? Jimmy laughed. Sam said, hey, speaking of blacking out, do you guys remember blackout?
Of course, Mikey said.
Sam said, my cousin Marcus is the one that taught me blackout, then I taught you guys, remember? Anyhow, Marcus is principal at some rich kid school in Pittsburgh. Calls me up the other day to tell me they had to make a rule prohibiting it. Too many fatalities. None at their school, but a handful in the area. Crazy, right? Penalties worse than getting caught with drugs. Issa said, blackout?
The fainting game, Lynn explained.
Choking game, purple haze, fuzz.
Really? None of these?
Issa lifted his hands.
You make yourself pass out, Alice explained. You get this crazy high, sleep for a minute, have like a lifetime of dreams.
Issa said, oh, erotic asphyxiation, sure.
Well, Jimmy laughed, we weren't doing the erotic part, and we did it to ourselves. We didn't choke each other out or anything, but yes.
How did you do it yourself?
Sam said, you crouch on the floor, breathe super heavy, like giving birth breathing, then sit up, hold your breath, and go stiff in all your muscles. Then you pass out. Want to make sure you've got a pillow where you're going to land.
Issa said, show me.
Yes, Alice cried. Show us, Sam.
Jimmy clapped his hands. Show us, show us, show us. Sam grabbed a throw pillow from the couch and went to the center of the room, where he lowered himself to his knees, which crackled like twigs as they bent beneath his weight. He had rolled up his sleeves, exposing meaty forearms, thick wrists.
"Put the pillow behind you," Alice said, "remember?"
Lynn said, "Make sure you're tilted backward when you go tight so you fall straight onto it, remember?" Jimmy said, "What are you hoping to dream about?"
"None of your business," said Sam.
Alice said, "You don't have high blood pressure, do you?"
Mikey said, "Don't die."
Sam breathed heavily in and out, wheezing with the effort, stopping once to cough into his fist, counting silently through his lips, and the others watched. Then Sam straightened up and leaned slightly backward, his full weight on his ankles, cheeks tomato red, and he went tight, the muscles in his thick neck bulging. A loud, high-pitched, trumpety fart squealed out from Sam, and he collapsed, not limp backward onto the pillow, but clumsily to the side, laughing now, holding his big belly, laughing so hard he gasped. Alice leapt up from the couch to straddle Sam and pin him down, and she tickled him under his arms as she had done many times when they were children. Sam laughed silently, tears eventually appearing in the corner of his eyes. Lynn was laughing as she said, "Alice, leave him alone. He can't breathe." Alice crawled off Sam. "Can you breathe?" Mikey sipped the expensive scotch Jimmy had poured for him. Alice sat back down on the couch.
"By the way, Sam," she said, "isn't it about time you fessed up to taking my picture that night I spent alone at the Gunner house?"
Everyone looked at her. Mikey said, "When was that?" Sam said, "What now?" Jimmy said, "I remember. Sam put her up to it because she said she didn't believe in ghosts." Alice nodded.
"I spent the night there. Must have been, what, 12 years old? 13? You guys don't remember?"
"Vaguely," Mikey said.
"I had my camera with me that night," Alice explained. "The disposable kind. Spent the night in the house and didn't think anything of it until I went to get my film developed a month or two later. It had a picture of me from that night. Someone snuck in and took a picture of me sleeping."
Mikey felt a chill race through him from tailbone to fingertip. Lynn said, "Really?" Jimmy said, "You didn't tell us." Sam propped himself up on his elbows and said, "It wasn't me." Mikey said, "Why didn't you tell us?"
"I was freaked out," Alice said. "But I didn't want you guys to be scared of the place because I didn't want us to stop hanging out there. Besides," she turned to Sam, "I eventually just convinced myself it was you. You were the one who wanted me to believe there was a ghost, and I figured it was your way of trying to scare the bejeebus out of me. So I was especially determined to put on a brave face."
Sam said again, "I seriously swear it wasn't me." Lynn said, "Maybe it was the ghost." Jimmy said, "It must have been the ghost."
Alice said, "Ghost schmost."
Mikey said, "Maybe it was Sally." They all turned to look at him. Lynn said softly, "Maybe it was."
Jimmy said, "If it wasn't any of us, it had to be either the ghost
or Sally," Lynn said.
Alice frowned. "Why, though?"
Mikey said, "Maybe Sally wanted us to believe in ghosts." They shared a quiet and chilly silence for a few moments. Mikey found himself suddenly grateful for Alice's solid presence next to him. Eventually, Alice rose from her seat on the couch in order to lie down next to Sam on the ground.
"You want an Indian wrestle?" she said.
The two of them scooted around so that they were lined up at their hips, head to toe. With effort, both raised their inside leg while Alice counted, 3, 2, 1, go! They hooked their legs together at the knee, and Sam won almost immediately, flipping Alice over into a lopsided back somersault. Mikey, Lynn, Jimmy, and Issa applauded. Alice rose, fixed her braid, did a bow, massaged her knee. Jimmy turned up the music in the other room, which was now featuring an energetic jazz trio, and Issa sat at the piano, improvising a rich harmony along with the recording. Mikey leaned toward Alice and said, "What are you not telling me?"
"What?"
"Lynn said there's something you're not telling me."
"Oh," Alice smiled. "That."
She threw her dark braid over her shoulder.
"I'm not telling you."
Jimmy returned and took a seat between Alice and Sam. Alice sipped her Lagavulin and pulled her legs up onto the couch and rested her head in Jimmy's lap. Mikey felt himself being pulled into a balmy haze of nostalgia.
Alice said, "Tell us a story, Jimmy."
"About what?"
"Life," Alice said.
Jimmy was quiet for a moment and ran a hand through his glossy dark hair. "Once upon a time, there were six best friends," he said. "They were all very different, but they fit together very nicely. One of them loved numbers and solutions. One of them loved music, and she wished the world was more beautiful. One of them was a fearless leader who wanted to protect the others. One of them always wanted to make the others laugh. One of them was kind, and he taught the others how to be good to one another. The last one was a mystery. The six of them needed one another. They belonged together." Jimmy was quiet for a bit. Then he said, "The end."
Alice scowled up at him. "That's not a story, and I don't like being typecast."
"Yeah," Lynn said, "that's not a story. What happens to them?"
"You have to tell us, Jimmy," Alice said. "What happens next?"
Lynn said, "A story has to have an ending." Jimmy said, "I already said the ending."
"What was it?"
"They belonged together."
Lynn said, "But that's only a beginning."
"Yeah," Alice said.
"And what does it mean to belong together? What does it actually mean?"
Alice's voice rose in pitch and wavered with emotion.
"Tell us something real, Jimmy."
He was quiet for a bit.
Alice said, "Somebody, anybody, say something real."
He was quiet for a long time, except for the soft music Issa played, the crackle of the dying embers of the fireplace, and the distant lament of the wind whipping over the frozen lake, singing low, then soaring high, a curious melody. Mikey said, "I can hardly remember her voice." Chapter 22. The fire hissed in the corner. The air had a softness to it, and the snowy landscape before them looked swollen and resplendent. Time felt flabby, dubious, and unnatural. Alice finally said again, imploringly, "A real story, someone?" Jimmy said, "How about a real scary story?"
"Ooh," Alice shivered dramatically and poked at Sam and Mikey on either side of her. "Yes, please."
Jimmy got up to throw another log on the fire. It sparked and crunched over the coals. He used a wrought iron poker to adjust the placement of the log and said, "How scary on a scale from 1 to 10? Sam said,
11.
Jimmy laughed and returned to the couch.
Lynn said, "I want scary enough to keep me up all night."
"Okay," Jimmy said. He swirled his fingers together. "Okay. Let me think for one more minute." He paused. "Okay," he said. He looked around the circle, making sure to meet the eyes of everyone there. "There was a place," he said. "We've all been there. A place that had a darkness to it. Being at the place made people want to do bad things."
Sam said, "Stop, I'm already too scared."
Alice laughed,
"No, go on."
Mikey said, "More." Jimmy said, "The feeling a person got when they were at this place. It gave you, I can't even find the right words, it made you feel near to evil. It made you want to do bad. Sam said, like what?
Evil. It made you feel dark. Dark in your heart.
Death in your heart.
There's no way to explain it. But everyone who ever went there shared this wicked feeling about it. The thoughts they had when they were there. A blackness in the soul.
Alice whispered, "Where was it?"
"I can't tell you," Jimmy said.
Mikey said, "But you said we've all been there."
Jimmy nodded.
Sam said, "Together?"
Jimmy said, "Yes."
Alice sucked in her bottom lip.
"Was it the Gunner house?"
Jimmy shook his head.
"Nope."
Lynn said, "Really? But where else have we all been together?"
Mikey said, "You're 100% sure we've all been there, together."
Jimmy nodded.
Alice said, "Continue."
"One day," Jimmy said, "I was at this place. I was having this terrible feeling, this darkness. When a couple, they looked like they were in their 40s or so, walked by. They had a camera. He was taking pictures of her. I asked if they'd like me to take a picture of the two of them together, with the water behind them. The fire popped once, very loudly, and Mikey jumped."
Lynn giggled nervously.
Mikey said, "So this place was on the lake?"
Jimmy nodded.
"And they said, sure." The man put his arm around the woman. They both smiled. I took their picture.
Alice said, "Then what happened?"
"I handed the camera back to the man," Jimmy said. He hesitated again. The wind outside howled. Mikey felt as if his skin were about to jump out of itself. Faintly, a train's wheezy horn sounded. Jimmy put a finger in the air.
"I could hear a train that day, too," he said.
He softly imitated the whistle.
Ooh, ooh.
It sounded just like that one sounds right now. Alice's eyes were enormous, brows arched with anticipation, practically at her hairline.
"And?"
Jimmy said, "And I watched as the two of them walked directly inland to a wooded area about a quarter of a mile away. I was still at the water's edge, but could see them the whole way. Hand in hand they walked. They looked so happy and loving with one another that I was starting to doubt the darkness of the place. I was starting to think that maybe my feelings were wrong, that it was just in my head." The train sounded again. Jimmy said, "And I could hear the train."
Sam whispered, "Then what happened, Jimmy?"
I watched as the couple approached the train tracks, still holding hands. They stood at the train track's edge.
Ooh, ooh.
Moments later, the train was approaching, barreling down, and a split second before it passed them, the woman shoved the man onto the tracks, and the train ran him over. The woman was gone by the time the whole train had passed. A very weighty silence crashed into Mikey's ears, and his entire body prickled with goosebumps. Lynn said, "Wait, is this the place you were talking about? Right here? It happened on those train tracks just up the road?" She buried her face theatrically in her elbow. Mikey said, "This is the place that makes people want to do bad?" Sam said, "Is this where it happened?" Jimmy nodded. Alice cried out. "That's not fair!" She wildly scratched at herself and shook out her hair. "That's not fair, Jimmy! Too scary! We're supposed to sleep here tonight! Too much!"
"Yes, too scary," Mikey agreed.
Jimmy laughed.
"You guys asked for 11 out of 10.
"Wait," Sam said. "But that didn't really happen, right? You just made that up." Jimmy was still laughing.
"No, no, no."
Lynn said, What if... She paused and looked around the circle. What if that kind of place does exist? What if Sally was there?
Sam said, Do you mean when she decided to commit suicide? Lynn nodded.
What if she just found herself at a place where, like you said, Jimmy, there was just a terrible darkness that made her want to do bad?
Jimmy said, You mean maybe not an actual place, but a state of mind, beyond her control. Mikey's thoughts returned to Jimmy's words earlier, when he had said Sally must have been in a terrible place. Mikey said, alone.
Alice looked directly at Mikey and said, Have you been over the Skyway since Sally's suicide?
Mikey was quiet for a moment. He shook his head.
I take the long way around.
Is it because you don't want to think of her in that place?
Mikey said, I don't want to think about what she was thinking about when she was there.
It felt too close to him somehow. Sally, even now that she was gone, felt too close. He couldn't explain it. And he was fearful that if he found himself up on that soaring overpass, if he pictured a slim, pale body dropping straight like a nail to the river 100 feet below, if he even began to imagine the sort of darkness that could overtake a person, that could take them to a place that was so far away and so alone. When Mikey pictured this scene, sometimes he wasn't sure if it was Sally in it or himself. Mikey felt as if now that Sally had taken her own life, he understood her better than he ever had before.
Chapter 23. Somehow, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. Issa and Lynn were the only ones who made it up to bed. Mikey, Jimmy, Alice, and Sam slept on the couches of the main room, holding one another. Arms and legs crossed all over each other. Someone's shoulder for a pillow, someone's heavy sleeping arm, a comfortable weight across the chest. Someone's slow and peaceful breathing, a slight rattle at its peak. Then, somehow, it was 7 o'clock in the morning. They were woken by the bright sun skimming over the snow when it sailed into the room and onto their faces. Alice watched Mikey as he located his glasses, which were perched on Jimmy's knee, and he rubbed his eyes and yawned before putting them on. Mikey's tongue felt as thick and dry as a stone. A dream was still knocking around inside of him, but he couldn't quite grasp the details. Alice said to Mikey, You look god-awful. Mikey said, And yet, I feel even worse. Alice accused Sam of snoring like a hog and the entire group of passing gas. Mikey rose to stretch out his stiff back, and his muscles screamed. Jimmy had brought breakfast supplies with him the night before, and he toasted up some bagels. Blueberry, whole wheat, Asiago cheese, rye. He laid out an assortment of butter and jam and cream cheese, scallion, strawberry, honey walnut, garlic and chives. He brewed coffee. He set out a pitcher of orange juice and a basket of bananas. They ate together. Alice complained about a hangover, and Jimmy offered Advil. Chris said she had enjoyed a marvelous deep sleep and asked what she had missed. Lynn said that she and Issa had talked it over and planned to marry in their hometown in Pennsylvania in about a month, mid-February, if that would suit everyone. Sam said he hoped Justine would join him for the occasion. Alice and Chris were the first to depart, heading back to Lackawanna to visit Alice's parents before leaving town. Alice carried Finn, who she had swaddled in a wool blanket like a large child, over her shoulders, and she panted under his weight and waved goodbye to the group with Finn's paw. Lynn and Issa went next, promising they would send details about their wedding in the next few days. Mikey, Jimmy, and Sam cleaned up around the house for several hours. When it came time for Sam to leave, he required their help to push his rear-wheel drive Nissan up and out of the driveway. Once Sam had gone, Jimmy brushed snow from his knees, looked at his watch, and said to Mikey, "You want to grab lunch and chat at McDowd's? I haven't had their fish sandwich in about a decade, and my mom's not expecting me till dinner." McDowd's was the greasy pub located a few miles up the lake, where as teens they liked to go for sandwiches and fries after school and on weekends, as soon as Alice got her driver's license and could take them. Mikey followed Jimmy, who had rented a four-wheel drive black Suburban for the day. They passed Jackie's Flower Shop, Yaya's Donuts, and the Dollar General. They passed the 7-Eleven where Mikey bought cereal and milk when he wasn't up for a trip to the grocery store. At the restaurant, Jimmy chose a table that overlooked the frozen lake. The dining room decor had not changed over the years, walls covered in fiberglass fish mounted on lacquered wood, a row of trucker caps nailed to the wall where it met the ceiling, red and green plaid curtains, bright felt NFL mini pendants, photos of Buffalo Bills players with autographs in Sharpie, an old-fashioned cash register that ka-chonked noisily as the drawer opened and closed and rattled with change, 50s music playing through old Marshall speakers mounted high on the wall. Jimmy and Mikey ordered fish sandwiches and Labatt Blues from the server, who looked as if she were about 14 years old. She had green stripes in her hair and a diamond stud in her nostril, which looked to be infected. Jimmy ran his finger along the windowsill to his right, collecting a bit of dust, then blew it back into the air. He had pockets under his eyes, the light bruises of insufficient sleep. The server returned with their beers. They cheersed, and both drank. Jimmy cleared his throat and said, "Listen, I mentioned it yesterday before we got interrupted, and there's something been eating me practically alive, Mikey. I've almost called you up to tell you 100 different times over the years, but never could quite get myself there." Jimmy paused and swallowed. "There's something I need to tell you." Jimmy's voice was suddenly thin and unsteady, all breath and no muscle. Mikey looked at him. Jimmy's eyes were 100 different shades of blue with the sun directly on them. He ran his palm over his lips and black beard. "Something Sally knew about you," Jimmy said.
"That I didn't know?"
Jimmy nodded. "Sally swore me to secrecy, and I held it in confidence," Jimmy explained, "out of respect. It was not my information to share. But now that she's gone..."
"What is it?" Mikey said, a strange and fearful pulse zooming through him.
Jimmy sipped his beer once, twice, more, until half his beer was gone and his eyes were watery. He looked directly at Mikey.
"Your father is not your father."
Mikey frowned.
"What? Who is he?"
"He was just a neighbor."
"What?" Mikey said. "Who's neighbor? What are you talking about?"
Jimmy said, "John Callahan, the man who raised you, is not your father."
"Then who is? I don't understand. Is this about my mother? What do you know?"
Mikey felt a thick and powerful desperation, like mud moving through his organs. Jimmy said, "Sally's father fled to Canada while Corinne was still pregnant with Sally, to get out of paying child support. When Sally was a baby, Corinne became pregnant again. The father of that second baby, a son, is unknown. See, Corinne couldn't even narrow it down." Mikey stared at Jimmy, this knowledge not yet seeping into him, but skittering along the surface of his consciousness.
"You were the second child," Jimmy explained, his voice soft and round with sympathy. "Corinne is your mother. They don't know who your biological father is, but it's not John."
"Oh, God," Mikey said. "Oh, God." He felt as if he had been crushed by a wave and was gasping for life, breathing in pure salt that hurt him and choked him.
"How did I end up? Why did I end up? My dad?"
At the time, John was already living in the house where you grew up. You were living up the street with Corinne and Sally. When you were very small, 2 years old, you somehow made your way out of Corinne's home and up the street a short way one afternoon. John looked out on his front lawn, and all of a sudden, there was a kid there. No parent in sight. He went to you. Mikey stared at Jimmy with his mouth open, a dry hole. Jimmy continued. John had good enough knowledge of the neighborhood to figure you had come from Corinne's home. He didn't know her personally, but knew her reputation, and knew she had little ones in the house. He went to return you to her, and when he got to her house, well, apparently whatever he saw in her house that day, apparently he couldn't find it in himself to leave you there. Jimmy's speech was too rapid and precise. Mikey couldn't latch on. These words sounded as if they had been thrown into a blender. They came out senseless and unpalatable. So, Mikey said, slow down. Corinne just let the neighbor take me? To live with him and raise as his own? And why would he... Did Sally... I don't understand. Jimmy's eyes searched over Mikey's face, his own expression mirroring Mikey's despair. I'm sorry, Jimmy said, a sharp, painful break in his throat. Mikey said, tell me. Jimmy took a moment to collect his emotions in order to continue the story. Some arrangement was made, he said. I imagine it might have involved threats from child services, might have involved money. They reached some agreement, and it was decided that you would remain under his roof and be raised as his own. But why? Wait, Sally knew that we were half-siblings? When? How? Sally didn't find this out until she was about 16. She didn't have any early memories of you. She would have only been about 3 years old at the time when you left their home. She discovered all of this out just shortly before she cut herself off from us. Messy emotions were bashing up against one another inside Mikey. How? She overheard a conversation between Corinne and John. Every now and then, Corinne would call John up and cry to him about wanting you back in her home. John always managed to talk her down, but Sally overheard Corinne in the middle of one of these conversations. When Corinne got off the phone, Sally confronted her, and Corinne confirmed it. Of course, Corinne painted herself in the best possible light. Nothing about leaving you to wander the streets as a toddler. Nothing about whatever John saw in their home that made him change his mind about leaving you there. So how did Sally know that part of the story? Sally confronted John next. She went to him that evening, when you weren't home, and told him what she had overheard and what Corinne had told her. John confirmed everything and told his part of the story willingly, except for what it was that he saw that very first day that made him change his mind about leaving you there. He said that that was better left forgotten, and he implored Sally not to tell you any of this. He knew he had no legal right to act as your guardian. Mikey's thoughts turned to Sam's recollection the previous night, of Sally leaving Mikey's home in an emotional state over an interaction for which Mikey was not present. So, Mikey said, why did whatever my dad saw in Corinne's home, why did he save me from it but leave Sally? He told Sally he wanted her to come with him too. Sally was very small, of course, but old enough to understand the question, and old enough to answer it. And she didn't want to go with him? Jimmy shook his head. Corinne? Apparently, Corinne was too far gone to register much of what was happening at the time. Mikey said, but Sally wouldn't leave her mother. That's right, Jimmy said. Sally wouldn't leave her mother, Mikey repeated, considering this. And Sally just kept all of this inside? Well, except for sharing it with you, of course. Jimmy nodded. She swore me to secrecy. John was adamant that none of this come to light. He thought that was the best thing for you.
Jimmy twisted a napkin into a rope, then wove it through his fingers.
My dad.
Mikey swallowed and felt a hot, shivering rise of emotion. Not toward his biological father, but toward John Callahan, the man who had found Mikey on his front lawn. Then Mikey closed his eyes and pictured Sally's face.
Of course. How could it have been more obvious?
The arc of her eyebrows, identical to Mikey's. The straight, narrow nose, the placement of the freckles. Everything corroborated this. Corinne, too. Her appearance had been ravaged by addiction, but Mikey could still recognize the likeness even in what remained of her. Mikey stuffed a napkin into his eye sockets and released a heavy exhale. Sally, his first friend. Mikey drank two-thirds of his beer very quickly and stared out over the frozen lake, which shimmered like a sea of diamonds. The smell of grease and fish was overwhelming as the server passed with food for another table. He felt like he understood nothing. Jimmy said, "You okay?" Mikey didn't know what he was. Sunlight surged in through the window of the diner, warm on Mikey's hands, reflecting off his silverware. Mikey understood, from a logical standpoint, why John had not wanted him to know, why he had felt it best to protect Mikey from this information. But why Sally? Why wouldn't she want this bond to be known? Why wouldn't she want him to understand? Why did she want both of them to go through life alone? As though having followed Mikey's thoughts, Jimmy said, "By the time Sally told me all of this, her mind was made up."
But, Mikey said, why?
Sally still fit into the storm window of Jimmy's basement even when she was 16 years old, although it required a sharp bend at the waist and a collapse of the shoulders, which were the widest part of her. It was late March, just a week or so after Sally's 16th birthday. It had been many months since she had paid Jimmy a midnight visit, because her mother spent more and more nights away from home these days, allowing Sally to sleep peacefully in her own bedroom. Sally let herself into Jimmy's basement and settled herself on the couch where she had spent so many nights before. She didn't expect that Jimmy would come find her there, but she hoped he would, and eventually he did. Jimmy woke in the night to a bright beam of moonlight on his face, as luminous as white silk. It tugged him gently out of sleep, and he rose to use the bathroom. Before returning to his room, Jimmy was struck by the familiar sensation that someone was awake elsewhere in the house. Sally was his first guess, even though she hadn't spent a night in Jimmy's basement in months. It was a very particular feeling that accompanied Sally's presence, a heavy sort of precariousness. Jimmy peered out the hall window and could not tell from two floors up if the grass between his and Sally's home had been recently trampled, or if the basement storm window was propped open. But his intuition whispered that it was Sally, so he went to the basement. Sally was on the couch where she always slept, but she was not asleep. Instead, she sat upright, hands folded over her lap, wearing a large gray t-shirt and ankle-length yellow pajama pants with a pink flowered design, and she was staring across the room at the dartboard, its green surface peppered with tiny holes. When Jimmy entered, she turned toward him, and her face was white and long. Jimmy suddenly felt cold. He went to the couch and sat next to her. Sally said, "Do you remember anything that happened when you were 3 years
old?"
Sally nodded.
Jimmy thought, "My earliest memory, I think, is around school starting. Vaguely. Not much before, really. Not anything before, maybe."
Sally was quiet for a bit. She said, "Anything that we have no memory of, it's like it never even happened, right? It doesn't matter. It's like it doesn't even exist."
"I wouldn't say that."
Sally said, "Think about it, though.
If you don't remember something, it might as well have never happened. It wouldn't make any difference to you.
Jimmy and Sally had never had this sort of conversation. Usually Sally's concerns were immediate and straightforward, her afflictions easy to trace.
Jimmy said,